don't let these people beat you. All they want to do is take from you everything you've ever known, everything that you've ever had. They can take your business, your apartment. They can destroy your family. But what they can't take is who you are and what you're made of. They can't take your passion. They can't take your desire. And they can't take your knowledge. He goes, you can go get all that back. He goes, you go build another $100 million company.
Welcome to Seek, Go, Create. This is your host, Tim Winders. I'm an executive coach, work with leaders and leadership teams. I am currently in the passenger seat of the RV in kind of in the Black Hills of South Dakota, just talking with our guest. He's a biker, and Sturgis Week is going on, for those that are aware. 500,000, 700,000 motorcyclists pile in, and around us here in the RV, we've got some motorcycles. So you may hear that low rumble of a Harley Davidson in the background during this podcast, but that's okay. We're here to have some fun. I've got a great guest. We're going to be talking about some real estate success and redefining success, what that means. Got somebody that's got a lot of experience, and so I'm looking forward to it. Let's jump right in. I've got Mike Morosky. He helps busy professionals create passive income and grow generational wealth. He's a trainer and coach for real estate investors, public speaker, and he's the host of the Insider Secrets podcast. He's also an author. He's got a lot of things going on. He's got 30 plus years of real estate experience. And listen to this. He's got over, I think he's controlled roughly $285 million in real estate and real estate transactions. Mike, welcome to Seek, Go, Create.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate being here, and super excited after our initial conversation here. So.
Yeah, I am too. And maybe, and I know you won't, it won't bother you one bit if you hear that little boom, 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 boom rumble in the background, will it?
I may break out in a sweat or something, but
I see on your shelf behind you, got a couple motorcycles on the shelf that, for those that are watching the video.
Yeah.
Cycler. Good. Cool. Very cool. Listen, let's jump right in. We have just met, but let's just say you bump into somebody out and about on an airplane or something like that, and they ask you what you do. What's your response?
Yeah, I'm a huge networker too. So this is a great question. I think everybody needs to know their elevator pitch, right? I'm the chief investment officer for a multifamily hedge fund. We buy large apartment complexes in specific markets, partner with people like yourself, and share in the profits. Is that something you'd be interested in?
I love the question there at the end. It's, man, let's decide if we need to keep talking or not. That was a great model for people listening in. Of a great elevator pitch. I bet you've said that a few times.
I have said that a few times.
You mentioned you're a networker. Tell me, let's go and dive in a little bit here. Networking, is it something that you've always done? Did you teach yourself, or are you, is it just a natural, or what is that? What does that look like for you?
Yeah, I think I think I'm an introvert. I've never been a guy to go up to a girl in a bar and try and pick up a girl. I've always had that trepidation, that little bit of fear. But I love to go to these networking events and just meet people and walk up to people. And what I really like, Tim, is I like when I'm speaking at an event and I work the room before I speak. And they'll have a picture, like I was just at an event this week that I was speaking at. It was a luncheon and they had a picture of me and little blurb on the screen. And I'm talking to somebody and they went like this. And they went, hey, you're the speaker. I love that. But yeah, it's an icebreaker. And the people I really love to network with are the ones where you look at them across the room and they got their face buried in a phone. And they're supposed to be at a networking event meeting each other. And those are the people I always walk up to. Hey, hate to interrupt you, but you know.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that, my wife and I are fascinated by that too. We're recording this on a Friday. We've got a date night. We're going out tonight and we'll go places and you see people. Actually, we start to see people our age. You and I would be more in the mature category, I believe. We're both in that boomer generation. I'm on the very end of it. And it's fascinating to go out, see two people on what they might be calling a date, like you just mentioned, networking, where they're supposed to be getting around other people. but yet they're both on their phones. And I don't know, that kind of bothers me a little bit. What's your thoughts when you see that?
Yeah, I'm a big people watcher too, right? So I do the same thing. I'll see people, they'll sit there all night having dinner with each other and don't say two words to each other. And it's really, where is that at? And I'm not trying to be critical. I think part of that is that I have this relationship with Jesus today in my life. And I've learned over the years that, you know, this kind of thing that we're doing right now is more important than anything else.
Yeah, I agree. It's that heart piece. And I think these devices are great tools. I know you probably use the heck out of them in your business. I do in my business. We're on one of these tools right now.
Yeah, right.
And it's allowing people to listen in on these tools. But I think some people become slaves to them instead of making them a slave to us. I've got this, maybe this Holy Spirit, but I want to dig a little bit more on this networking, because I had this thought, because I do notice some people that are really, really good at it. I think some people do it for various reasons and all that. But when you're networking, do you have a motive or an agenda or something going through your mind as you're, I hate to say working a room, that sounds manipulative, but you go in a room that's got 20, 30, 50 people in it. And you were obviously teaching and speaking, so you had a purpose to be there. But what's your general thought when you go into a situation like that about other people?
Yeah, great. It's a great question. One of my companies is My Core Intentions, right? I think we have to be intentional about everything we do. So if I'm in an event that I'm speaking at, my intention is to know the room before I get on stage. I want to know my audience. So I want to tailor my talk a little bit to who's there and how detailed can I get or how broad do I have to be, right? The other aspect is Tony Robbins said, at one time, I had heard him say that you're only one person away. And take that in any context. You maybe you know about the six laws of separation, 6 degrees of separation. You're only six people away from anybody you want to meet in the world. So how do you get to that person, right? You only get there because you learn about this person. I'm a big, tell me about yourself. I don't, there's that old joke, right? Enough about me. What else do you want to know about me? I'm not like that at all. I want to know about you, and I truly want to know about you. I want to know what makes you tick, where your heart's at, see if there's a connection. Tim, you and I got on this. We had never met before, and I could tell there's going to be an instant connection between us.
So, Mike, have you always been that way, or have you developed? Here's the reason why I asked that. I was pretty hard charger. I grew up into the business world in the 80s, which was go, 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 money, money, money. And I had a lot of that was baked in me. And so when I started doing some business in the late 80s, early 90s, I did a network marketing for a little while. That's actually where I got saved. So I don't say anything negative about it. But I recognized as I networked that often, and I was pretty good at it because I'm outgoing and all that, but often I looked at people as if they had a dollar sign on their foreheads. Mm. And I'm not saying that because I'm proud of it. I've recognized it. And I wasn't looking at them for their potential or what can I do for them as much. It might have been a little bit more trying to impress versus inspire, trying to sell instead of share. And those are some things that I've had to come to terms with. But have you always been in the role you're in now, or have you matured into it? Have you learned? Did you make some mistakes along the way? I think this is a valuable conversation for people because it's powerful.
Yeah. Listen, I've made my share of mistakes, some small, some big, no doubt about that. But just like you said, I've been in real estate 30 years. And when I went into business, I was on the sales side. So as a residential sales agent, Tim, my first 9 months in the business, I did 78 deals. I was Remax Rookie of the Year. And here's what happened, though. It was churn and burn. I knew, so I was in the business for 15 years, and I knew that every time I picked up the telephone, I made $20. Every time I dialed the telephone, I made $20, right? I made 20,000 phone calls a year. Listeners can do the math on that. And it was churn and burn. It took me 3 years before somebody said, do you have a database? I'm like, a what? I didn't keep track of anybody. I didn't know anybody. I didn't. And so here's where it made sense to me. I'm in the grocery store one day and I see a client that I had a year and a half, 2 years before. She says, "Oh, you're going to have to come by the new house for dinner. We just moved." I'm like, "What?" I go, "You just bought your house." She goes, "Yeah, we looked for you. We couldn't find you, but we bought a bigger house and sold the house that we bought with you." And I was like, I had to figure out, how does that never happen again? Because I just lost about $700,000 worth of business, but it was a learning experience. But like you said, man, that early on, people had a dollar sign on them. I was probably in the business 5 years before I really started to build relationships with people. And then when I went the apartment business, that's when I really started to see more and more that I needed to have deeper relationships with people.
Yeah, because we'll get to that later. I want to talk about some other things before we get into the multifamily aspect, but yeah, that's not a churn and burn business. The real estate is transactional for a lot of people. And even we did single family homes and I was churning a lot of that early on. But the multifamily, those are bigger, kind of longer legged transactions. And you've got to be comfortable with all the parties involved, correct?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Follow-up question. I'm loving this conversation on networking because there's a piece. I want to mention something to the audience. There was a conversation on an episode that probably, if you back up a few, if you're listening in here with a Mark Slaybaugh, that we had this conversation where he said something to the effect of, "You're not going to make significant change in your life if you're hanging out with the same group of people you've always hung out with." He said, "You got to change your network to make changes." And to me, this relates to that. To continue moving forward and growing, you have to grow. But yet, it's not just that churn and burn. So the follow-up question I've got for you, because you mentioned you're a follower of Jesus early on, where were you at spiritually early on? Because I had been saved, but that transformation process was still going on. I still had 2 feet in the world system, and I was just dipping my hand barely into that baptismal pool to get reborn and all of that. I don't think my heart had been transformed to look at people the way I needed to. Where were you at spiritually? And maybe this will be a good time to back up and see your spiritual background and all.
You're asking some tough questions today, Tim.
Oh, yeah. Come on now.
So I got baptized and sobered up in 1983. Ooh. I went into real estate in 1991. So let me just date this a little bit. But I was a pocket Christian. So what I mean by that is I pulled God out of my pocket when I was in a jam and I needed help. Help me get out of this. It's like you're getting pulled over by the police for a speeding ticket and you go, "Oh my God, Jesus, please help me." But it wasn't until a number of years later that I really had decided to build a relationship with Jesus. So. Mm.
And then that probably started spilling over into how you perceived other people. It did for me. I think you probably started, I'll use the term, your heart started softening to other people versus looking in the mirror, thinking about it's all about you. Is that kind of your
journey? 100%. 100%. Yes.
So fascinating. So 1983 seems like a real pivot. We talk about redefining success here. On Seek, Go, Create. Obviously, we've all been through it. I think people that say they haven't gone through significant change, catalytic events, I really would like to know more about them because I don't see how that can happen in this world we're in. But are you in Chicago? Is that right?
I am. Yeah, I live in Chicago. Been here my whole life. I'm about ready to hang up my snow shovel, though. I'll tell you that. Scottsdale and Vegas are looking pretty good.
It's a beautiful day here where we are. And my wife and I were just booking our winter travel and we're thinking about Arizona is where we're looking down like Casa Grande or something like that. So we're excited about looking at that area.
Grande is a beautiful area. We're actually building a development there.
Oh, nice. Very good. Tell me more. Let's go ahead and let's dive into a little bit of the redefining success. Sounds like 83 was a big year and 91 was a big year, whichever one you want to choose. But just tell a little bit more about the redefinition, the transition, whatever occurred there. And I'll just let you share whatever you feel, knowing that our audience can handle the deeper stuff too, if you want to go there.
Yeah. Listen, 83, I was in the construction business, newer entrepreneur, doing everything, hiring, firing, bookkeeping, marketing, sales, and still banging nails in the field, right? Mm-hmm. And I went from one helper working with me to having 25 employees and trucks and heavy equipment, 1990. And 83 was a pivotal year in my life. My dad got murdered. I became a Christian and I sobered up. It didn't all happen in that order. I sobered up, I became a Christian, and my dad got murdered in that order. But in 90, I was burned out. I woke up one morning and I looked at my wife at the time and I said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Luckily, I had somebody knocking at my door to buy my company. So we sold the company and said, let's take a year off. Any good entrepreneur never takes time off, right? You're always spinning, doing something. We went and bought a couple of two flats and house hacked them. And house hacked them long before house hacking was sexy. And people do it all the time now, but back then people thought, what are you, crazy? What are you doing? So it was a different environment. But I learned an important lesson. So Jim Rohn, I've been following Jim Rohn and Zig Ziglar at that time. Jim Rohn said, success leaves clues. And I always gravitated to that. So I met this real estate agent who was extremely successful, said, hey, I want to go into business. He said, I think you'd be great at it. Helped me get into business, made me a cassette tape of the fundamentals of the way he built his business. And I went and duplicated exactly what he did. And that's where I sold 78 houses that year. I went on to build a team selling between 100 and 130 houses a year. And we did that for about 12 years. Mm-hmm. Were there pivotal points? Yeah, I think there were pivotal points along the way. I got divorced from my first wife and really focused more on my career than I was focusing on when I was married and building a business. And again, still churning and burning, right? I hadn't gotten to that point in my life yet where relationship mattered.
Mm. So it seems as if, and I would guess, knowing the generation that you come from and the way you've talked so far, that you would be one of these folks we would consider a very hard worker. I'm guessing that you're a guy that it's probably hard for somebody to outwork you. Would that be correct?
Yeah, you could say that, Tim. I might have sobered up, but I didn't, not from work.
All right. So here's my follow-up to that, just to get you thinking a little bit more. I've noticed that about myself similarly. And I say this is, I'll make a statement and then I'll just let you respond to it in whatever direction you want to go. I have found that often our superpower, when it's overused or misused, can become our kryptonite. And so someone who is categorized as a hard worker, I would love for you to share whatever, and there's no right or wrong here, but share, what are some ways that has really helped you? And what are some ways that may have been a hindrance or a kryptonite? Because sometimes we could just try to work our tails off when we should be sitting back thinking or pausing or allowing the Lord to do something. I've noticed that for me. I don't know. If you haven't, you could say, no, Tim, I just worked my way through it and I'm good. But what are your thoughts when I say that?
The initial thought that comes to mind that is because I'm such a worker, because I'm so focused, because I'm such an entrepreneur and an overachiever, I've damaged marriages and I've damaged relationships with children as a result of that. And some of which are irreparable, which is really sad. I also feel that I've left an example for my children of work ethic. Because if you look at some of the people out there today, they're just a lot of laziness. And there is a middle of the road. You got, you know, that where you could be, where you could live, where you can operate. There is a middle of the road. I don't necessarily know that I found it, but there's a message in there if somebody wants to listen to that again.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. And the reason why is I've struggled with that myself. I fortunately do still have, I'm about to be married 35 years and have the two children. But I do think that my work ethic has made the relationship tougher with them, maybe. I don't know if that's the right term. And there are some generational things going on. You and I are roughly from the same generation. And I want to make sure I say this. I don't think we're right or wrong. There's some generations after us that they are approaching work and life differently than us. And maybe in some ways we could learn from them. I don't know. But I do find, and I went to Bible school. I'm going to ask you about Bible school here shortly because I know you went to Bible school. It was very interesting when I was in Bible school. There was this group of people that they were busting their tail, trying to get God's attention, do impact for the Lord, all that kind of stuff, which is great. And then there was these people that were just sitting around waiting. And I couldn't relate to the sitting around waiting. But I do think I should sit around and wait a little bit more on that. Anyway, and I don't know how to reconcile that. Some people probably just need to be hustling a little bit more, and some of us probably need to hustle a little bit less. Maybe that's the great tension that we have. So at what point did you go to Bible school? I saw Bible school somewhere on your resume.
Yeah, I went to Bible school in 2014 and 2018. So 2014, 2018. But you probably want to catch up before that.
Yeah, I probably do. That's oddly enough, that's when I was in Bible school, 15 to 17, 18.
Wow. Okay, that's cool.
Let's back up a little bit because obviously I think there were some stages along in your life here. Talk about at some point along the way, you were going through this churn of all of your real estate, and it was, which is, I love the transition because to me, that's very transactional. You are a real estate agent, so the relationships needed to be better, obviously, but pretty much you go to a closing, get a check, you walk away and you're done, you move on, you do the next one. At some point, something clicked in your mind. And I don't want to say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, like you started thinking more long-term or you started thinking differently about transaction. I don't know what it was, but where did something click along the way with this real estate journey that you went on?
Yeah, great question. So 2005, I saw the markets changing and wasn't real sure what was going to happen. I've always kind of, you know, I've been the kind of guy that, here, I'll give you an example. What a friend of mine and I are driving from where we live outside of Chicago to the lakes one weekend. And I said to him, I go, man, that corner right there would be great for a white hen. You may remember white hen. They were little store pantries like 7-Elevens, but a different version. He goes, no, you're crazy. They'll never build one there. The next weekend, we're driving to the lake again. There's a sign on the corner says, coming soon, white hen. That's the kind of guy I predestined this stuff.
You were a prophet. You were a prophet before you even knew it, right?
Right. So 2005, I see the market starting to soften and I knew that things were going to change. I didn't know what was going to happen or where the market was going to go. I had always wanted to be in the apartment business. There's a couple of big syndicators here in Chicago, and a syndicator is just a fancy word for somebody who raises private capital, marries it with real estate, runs and operates that deal, stays in the middle. And that's what I knew at the time about it. And so 2005, I said, hey, I'm going to go in the apartment business. So I started an apartment. I went and syndicated my first apartment deal in 2005. And Tim, over the next 30 months, I scaled a business to 4,000 units in 5 markets. I built a property management company managing 7,500 units. I built a $100 million company in a 30-month period between 2005 and...
Yeah, and then what happened?
I'm an overachiever. 2008 happened. The residential world went upside down. And I thought, it's residential. People are still going to need a place to live. They're going to need apartments. We were buying apartments in markets that had one type of employment, one employer in town, tertiary markets that didn't make sense. And when 2008 happened, shortly after the commercial crisis happened, and we went upside down. So Tim, I had grown way too fast. I was very unstable. I tell the people I coach and train today that take your time. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. I owned $60 million worth of real estate at 85% loan to value. I don't know who was worse, me for taking the money or the banks for giving it to me. I didn't pay attention to the details. So I didn't watch those KPIs, those key performance indicators, like I watch them today. I was undercapitalized to run my business. I hired 100 people. I had a payroll that was $1 million a year. It didn't make sense. We started to come off the rails. And I probably at the time, I had 38 companies, but at the time I decided I had 12 companies that I should have just let them go to foreclosure, let a few of my investors get hurt. But I tried to save everybody. I'm the oldest born. I'm the hero. I want to make everybody good. I don't want to give anybody bad news. I thought at the time, Tim, I thought this is just a recession. This is going to last 17 or 18 months. The markets are going to bounce back. There'll be a 10% correction, just like the past couple of recessions. But that's not what happened. Lasted 7 or 8 years, a 40% correction in the market. You can't weather that storm. So I'd gone to my accountant and my attorney and said, hey, what do we do? I came up with a plan that I was going to move money from my profitable companies to my non-profitable companies. My accountant and my attorney both said it was okay to do that. Just leave a paper trail. When the markets bounce back, put the money back. That was fine, except I didn't tell my investors I was doing it for non-disclosure. And we're in a business that you are held at a much higher standard. You're scrutinized at every step of the way. I didn't tell my investors. So I wound up being charged on wire fraud and mail fraud charges. And I got sentenced to 10 years in federal prison. And in 2013, I lost everything and went to prison.
So many questions I've got.
I bet.
What's interesting is 2013, when we lost everything. Bankruptcy was a year before that. We moved out of our big old home and lived in a Honda van for a while. So it was, I don't want to make light of prison, but it was our own little prison. I think everybody went through their prisons. First thing, I'm going to go there a little bit more, but I want to back up to that 08 and the mindset that you had heading into it. Hard worker, probably in your mind, you could work your way out of any situation, but you also had a spiritual background where you had given parts of your life to Jesus, maybe not all of it.
Right.
Spiritually, what were you thinking during that time? Let me tell you where I was, and then you could respond with where I thought, number one, that it was going to be about 12 to 18 months also. I didn't realize the government was going to get that involved and it would prolong and a lot of stuff there. We don't need to go down that road. But I really did think that the Lord, I was one of his favorites. And you know what? He did. It just didn't look like what I thought. But what was going on spiritually for you then? Where were you at with the Lord? I know you mentioned earlier, I use the term ATM machine. You get in trouble, you get pulled over, you go to him. Because obviously when you all of a sudden start realizing that there's wire fraud, there's stuff like that going on, you're probably not as cool hand Luke as you typically are. I could tell you've got a good little poker face and all that. What was going on the inside?
I was a mess. I was a wreck. My wife, I started drinking prior to that. And I was so messed up started drinking again. So we're both sober, going to program, working a 12-step program, involved in the church, serving a church, great relationship with Jesus. My business started to go sideways. I never talked to my wife about business. So she didn't know anything. Once in a while, I'd say, hey, we bought another apartment complex. I raised some money. I met this really interesting investor, but I never told her anything. Hindsight says that was a good thing now, but at the time wasn't a good thing. I had all this stuff going on. And then she started drinking. I thought she was having an affair. I thought, at least she's not having an affair. And so I didn't do anything about that piece of it. And I started drinking then like a year later, and because I had figured my life's a mess. It's off the rails. I'm losing everything. Who cares anymore? I had no relationship other than the fact, I think my saying at the time, Tim, was, how the hell could you do this to me? After all these years of following you, seeking you, trying to, how could you let this happen? I had two missions in life at the time. One was to provide safe and secure housing for my tenants, thinking I was doing a great thing. The second was that I wanted to employ 1,000 people because I wanted people to work for a great company. I wanted to be the best company in the country to work for. I wanted to have, and I always thought with those two missions, how do you go wrong? How does this come off the rails like this? Yeah, there was no relationship.
So I want to move on, but before we do, anything, I know I can guarantee you've been asked this before, but I'm going to put a little bit of a twist to it. I think you mentioned a few things that you probably should have done, coulda, shoulda, woulda. We could do armchair quarterback, have more reserves, different things like that. Obviously, communicate with your investors, those type things. But is there anything that you would have done differently? And I want to say this personally, in your quiet time, in your time that not working differently or structuring differently, but anything that you would have different, because I've got a very clear answer for me, but anything for you that you just, if you could go back and say, this is something I would have done differently.
Two things. One is I would have had a better quiet time and I would have listened because I didn't listen. I didn't listen to God. I didn't listen to the people around me. And I'll give you an example real quick. So 2008, I'm closing the biggest deal at the time. We had closed about 280 some units. I'm in a closing room at a title company in Cincinnati. Deal's not closing. My office isn't wiring the money. All day I'm there, 11 o'clock in the morning, finally 5 o'clock in the afternoon. My partner gets on the phone. He says, I don't know how to tell you this. You don't know how to tell me what? Where's my $500,000? Because I had to move the money from an escrow account this week into a business account. And I said, whoa, hold it, time out. I said, you knew we weren't supposed to do that. So now I want to just circle back for a minute. Remember I said a minute ago, I never told my wife anything about business. So this is Wednesday. I wind up dry closing that deal, which means we signed all the paperwork. I said, I'll have it funded by Tuesday. I go home over the weekend. I sold my partner's equity in that deal. And raise the rest of the capital I needed to get the deal funded by Tuesday. Important point right here. Friday night, I go to dinner with my partner and his wife and my wife. And my partner and I aren't really getting along. And on the way home from dinner, my wife says to me, I don't trust him. And I go, I think I'm being a good husband at this point. And I go, hey, honey, I got this under control. Don't worry about it. When I should have said, tell me more, what do you mean? Fast forward about 5 days, I'm at lunch with my outside legal counsel. So we had an in-house legal counsel and then I had an outside attorney. About 5 days later, I'm at lunch on Wednesday afternoon the next week with my attorney. We leave lunch and he's a big guy, played football and we're walking in the parking lot. He puts his arm around me and he says, I want you to know something. I said, what? He goes, I do not trust your partner and I don't like what's going on. So two incidents within 5 days of each other, that was a red flag. And I said, I got this under control. Don't worry about it. I wasn't listening to God and I wasn't listening to the people around me. That's my fifth biggest mistake that I made during that time. If I could rewind the clock, I wouldn't have picked that guy to be my partner. And I would have listened to my wife and would have listened to the key individuals around me.
And often God is probably using those people around us to speak to us. And I think that's the big test of how soft our hearts are. If our hearts are hard, man, it's all about us. That's what I noticed with myself. So in 13, you go to prison. And then you mentioned earlier between 14 and 18, you were in Bible school. Kind of bridge those gaps for me. Bridge prison, the Bible school, and share whatever you think you might need to share about prison. People probably going, man, ask what prison was like. But if you want to share whatever that was.
Prison sucked.
Well, now what do you think? It's great.
So
obviously you didn't serve 10 years.
No, almost eight. But so here's what happened. I went to prison and I thought my life was over. I always tell people, I say, I never flew private. I didn't have a big house. I didn't have a boat. We didn't have a fancy car. I was the neighborhood baseball coach. I was home every night for dinner. And I got ripped from that to live in a 12 by 12 room with three men I didn't know, nor did I like. Wonder what the hell happened in my life.
At what age? And you were 50, mid-50s?
53.
Yeah.
And I'm in prison about 3 weeks and my wife divorces me and it wrecked me. And now I'm like, okay, now what? How do I get through this? And I'm mad at God, by the way, at this point. Now I'm pissed. And I walk into gym one day, I'm probably in about 6 weeks. And I walk into gym one day and I always tell, I say, you know what? I was just window shopping. I wasn't looking to pick up a weight. I wasn't ready to work out. I had gone from running marathons to being 35 pounds overweight. Absolutely hated myself. Tim, frankly, I wanted to kill myself, but I was too afraid to. And this guy walks up to me, young kid, younger than me, 25 years younger than me. And probably 20 years younger than me. And he says, look, don't let these people beat you. All they want to do is take from you everything you've ever known, everything that you've ever had. They can take your business, your apartment. They can destroy your family. But what they can't take is who you are and what you're made of. What they can't take is what's up here and what's in here. They can't take your passion. They can't take your desire. And they can't take your knowledge. He goes, you can go get all that back. He goes, you go build another $100 million company. It won't be a problem for you. And I don't know what it was, but the switch flipped. And it was, I think that, and this is why I tell my story. A couple of reasons. We all have these defining moments in our life. And what do we do with them, right? How do we go this way or this way? I tell my story because I want to bring hope and inspiration. I don't want people are trapped. You said it. You were in that Honda in a prison, right? I think we're trapped in a prison in our minds. And unless we get out of there, I might have been behind a wall. People are trapped from addiction, from abuse, from childhood trauma. You know what? You can get over it. Go on. So this guy says, come to my class, start working out. You'll start to feel better. And I said, okay, I don't ask me why, but the next day I show up at this guy's class and I'm working out and I start working out and I start losing weight and I start feeling better. All of a sudden I start writing. I wound up writing two books. I wrote a book called Exit Plan, Your Complete Guide to Multifamily Investing and Why You Need an Exit Plan. My second book just came out on property management. I wrote an ethics course. I taught real estate investing, property management, and ethics in prison for 6 years. I went to college. I got a bachelor's degree in theology. I was on an outreach program. I went into the community, told my story to small business owners, local college students. I met a professor from the University of Minnesota. He and I co-authored a paper together that got published in the Business Journal of Ethics that gets taught today at the collegiate level for forensic accounting and sales and marketing classes. I came home, thought I was going to just go into coaching and training business, and that would be my new life, my new design. But what I started underwriting again because I needed to figure that out so I could teach people how to do it. And I find a deal in Florida and I go to a couple of my coaching clients and we partner on a deal. Along the way, my securities attorney says, hey, I think I can get you approved by the SEC. And I'm thinking there's no way this isn't going to happen. And 3 months later, she comes back with a written approval from the SEC that I can be an issuer of securities, a sponsor of deals, raise capital again. And it's funny how life has come full circle.
Yeah. And I want to pause there to make sure, because as you were talking about going to prison for what you went for, I'm actually trying to connect the dots between what you're doing now, which is you're raising funds and putting syndications and all that together. And I'm going, how does that happen? That's somewhat miraculous. I don't know all the details of that, but that doesn't happen to just everyone, does it?
No, not at all.
Yeah, because usually you make that mistake and there's not a second chance to go back. Because I think you'd already even reconciled. You're probably going to coach, train, probably not be the deal maker again, right?
Yeah, I actually didn't think I'd ever raise capital again. And it's funny because what happened was I was actually on a podcast one day. It was a lunchtime event. There were about 150 people on this event. And somebody says, "Hey, are you raising capital?" I said, "No." They said, "Why not? I wouldn't want to put my money with anybody other than you because you've already made the mistakes. You know what to watch out for." And I went, "Wow, that's interesting." So
it is interesting. And I find that, all right, I keep wanting to dig into real estate, but I think this is more important, Mike. I dealt with quite a bit of shame, but I never admitted it for a while. And I think that shame kept me from communicating, doing things like this, just sharing the story and things like that. Did you experience that? What did it look like? And then how, did you overcome all of that? Because, you know, at some point you just kind of feel like we need to go hide under a rock because,
yeah,
I don't know.
I hated myself. I couldn't believe that I did this to myself, to my family, I came from nothing, built this great success. I had a couple of smaller successes along the way, but built this $100 million company and just got wiped out. Hey, Tim, if the market would have corrected 10% or bounced back or there'd been a little glitch, it would have been different. But this was a 40% correction. We were in markets that you had employment in the area was transportation and small parts manufacturing businesses. They got wiped out. People got our occupancy in apartments dropped 30%. You can't mitigate that storm. But here's where you wanted to go. So I'm sitting in the chapel at church one night, and prison's not a place that you cry, but I'd cry for 18 months every day. They would find me in the chapel, in the balcony, in a fetal position, not being able to function. There were a couple of times that guys had to carry me back to my dorm for count. It was bad. I met a guy though, good friend of mine today. And I went up to him. I went up to him after a chapel one night and I said, "Can we talk?" And we talked for a few minutes. He goes, "Look, I'm going to give you two books. I want you to read five chapters out of those two books. If after you read those, if anything resonates, come back and see me." One book was by Henry Cloud. It was called How People Think or How People Change or something like that. And I read that. And then the other book, I don't remember what the other book was, but I read that and went back to him and he goes, "You read those?" He goes, "Nobody I give those to ever reads them." I read them. And he and I were inseparable for 18 months. And he taught me how to let Jesus love me. Mm. And that's what changed me. It changed my heart. It changed who I am.
So the difference, the contrast between Mike pre-2013 and then Mike today. Listen, I have no doubt you're a hard charger, all of that, but there's a softness, there's an openness, there's you and I, when we first clicked on, I think both of us felt like we were long lost friends. We could have hung out together and all of that. I'm guessing that wasn't quite, I'm sure you were a nice guy. I'm not saying anything, but is that a contrast from the way you were previous? What are some other things that are differences in, I'll just say, your heart? I don't even know if that's the right term, today versus then. And then I do want you to know we're about to go into what are the differences in the way you're doing business now versus the way you were doing business.
That's probably a good segue. So I have a friend who's been in the apartment business for years. He actually used to work for me and we fired him and he went on to do over 100,000 units between then and now, done really well in the business. And we're great friends today. He's my biggest cheerleader in the world. He says, "I'm going to be the Michael Milken of multifamily." But here's what he'll tell you. He'll tell you that then I was a dick. Today, you couldn't find somebody nicer. So was there a contrast? Absolutely. I thought it was about money. I thought I had the world by the short hairs. And you know what? I didn't care about people. I really didn't. As much as I said I did, I didn't. Today I care. Yeah. I hope you don't flat tire in the RV. I care about you today, right?
Yeah. The cool thing is, let's circle back to our beginning conversation. I feel like the Lord guided me. We talked about networking. I'm guessing you networked and went out and met people like we talked about earlier. But to me, what just clicked in my head is you're now out ministering to people. You just have this vehicle of real estate that allows you to interact with large numbers or number of people. But you're just looking for what you could do to love on people, to help people minister, maybe say a strong word to them if they need it. Is that correct?
Yeah, 100%. Yes. Today it's about, how do I help you? How do I help you grow? What do you need to know?
Sure. So you've got all these skills in real estate. You obviously, I think that the Lord did not want to remove you from that because the doors opened up to go back into it. How are you approaching that differently today than you were in, let's say, pre-08? Because I think the years, if they're anything like mine, the years you had from 08 to 13 were the real dark years. My guts were churning and all of that. It sounds like yours probably were too. So let's go the way you were doing business. Anything you want to share pre-08 to the way you're doing business now? What are some things you're doing different?
If you listened to those 5 mistakes I made, I grew too fast. I was over leveraged, undercapitalized, didn't pay attention to the details, and I didn't listen to people around me. What I'm doing different today is I'm more conservative in my underwriting. I'm putting more eyeballs on that. I'm making more strategic decisions. 2007, I closed 17 deals for 2,200 units. It was stupid, right? You don't need to do that. Matter of fact, there's been a couple of multifamily people who have just imploded recently in the changing market because of that effect. Large 3,000 property portfolios. And so today I'm much more conservative in my underwriting. I'm double checking, triple checking. As a carpenter, they say you measure twice, cut once. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing today. I'm paying attention to the details. I'm more involved in the asset management. I'm not just relying on other people. And I'm much more transparent. I tell my story every chance I get. I want people to know who I am, who they're getting in partnership with. And I have no problem today telling somebody I can't do business with you or don't want to do business with you. And if somebody says that to me, I'm okay, where I might not have been before.
Hey, one thing, Mike, you mentioned earlier, you mentioned this transaction that was in 2008 that you closed it dry. It wasn't funded. You were going through some things. And it seems to me like that deal, you were hammering it through, and by God, you were going to make that deal work. I had some condos we purchased on the water down in Florida that I always joke with people. I could tell you when the absolute peak of the real estate market was. It was when we closed those. We shouldn't have, but we did it anyway. That was the absolute peak of the market in that area. But it seemed like you were just driving deals through regardless. And now you are maybe looking for clues, or you're maybe going back to quiet time. You mentioned you missed some quiet time as far as a personal thing. What are the things now that let you know to back off, or this isn't a deal? And I know all the analysis. I'm almost not looking for the practical. I know the numbers and all that, but there are probably deals today that come across your desk that in 08 and before you would have hammered them through. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess I'm trying to tie together some practical and spiritual, and if I'm making things try to match that they shouldn't, but the Lord told me to pause more.
Yeah. Here's the thing though. We're in an environment right now where it's hard to get, it can be harder to get deals done, and you got to work a little bit harder, and you have to push a little bit more, and you have to ask some harder questions. It doesn't mean the deal's bad. It just means it's a harder environment right now to get anything done. It doesn't mean that I shouldn't do that deal. But back then, there were a couple of deals that I should have said, oh, never mind, let's not do it. Because the environment was so good and so robust, and the deal was still really hard to get done. Am I making sense in that?
Like, yes.
Like right now, it's harder to get deals done regardless of the deal, but that doesn't mean it's not a good deal or you shouldn't do it. Like, I'm doing a deal right now that it's just tougher to raise money today. People are, my credit card debt's up, or we're not ready to invest. We're not sure what's going to happen. We're scared. We're nervous. Don't be nervous. This is the time to be in front of the next bull run. This is the time to position yourself. We're going to come out of this. We're going to come out of it pretty quick. And you're going to say, darn, I should have gotten involved. But this will be a transference of wealth in this country.
Sure. That's a good transition, because before we finish up here, we've got a few minutes left. I wanted to ask, from your unique perspective, what are you seeing related to the economy and all that's going on? I love talking to people that have lived through a few cycles, because I think we have unique perspective, both macro cycles and micro. Both personally, you've gone through cycles, but also at the big level. What are you seeing? What are you saying? What are you thinking about what's going on? We don't have crystal balls, but we've been through some of this stuff. So what's Mike looking at right now with all of that?
Yeah, so I see some similarities to 2007, 8, 9, right? But different. So if you look back in 2007 and 8, they were financing residential real estate at 125% of value. And you could walk into a bank and get a loan for 80% of that 125% and 20%. So now you bought that 125% of value house for no money down.
Yeah.
Which went at the time was a great thing, because they thought that the appreciation would continue. We all know what happened, right? All that bad paper, because it wasn't just good borrowers, but it was mediocre borrowers that were doing that. The joke used to be that if you could fog a mirror, you could get a loan, right? And then look what happened. But today, you have a lot of equity in houses, and you've got interest rates at 3%. People don't have to move. You don't have the foreclosure problem that we had in 2008, right? So although the market has slowed down, I think it's going to be a soft landing. I think the feds are trying to create something difficult by raising interest rates. And even though they're raising interest rates, we're still not seeing the shortage in the workforce. Employment is good, right? Still. So honestly, I don't know why people are just not doing it. There is a disconnect in the bid-ask spread, though, from what sellers want. And sellers are still living in 2020 and 2021. You got to get out of that mode and come into reality. Pricing has to start to get down where cap rates are, or for the pricing for cap rates. You can't be selling deals today projected on tomorrow's value. And don't be buying them at that either. Make sure you're buying deals on existing numbers. From a market standpoint, I think the feds will raise the rates a couple more times. I think they're going to continue to try and slow down what they're not able to, haven't been able to slow down. And I think the market is going to bounce through this. We're going into an election year in the next 16 months. And We're gonna cycle out of it. And I think we're gonna come back bigger and better than ever, like we typically do.
Hmm. So and you could either take this for the big picture economy or even in the multifamily arena. What are some things that concern you, maybe, about what you're seeing? And then what are some things that excite you? And I love to ask questions like that for people that are of the age like you. You're in your mid-60s now, and I love to ask, what excites you, but what also concerns you? I don't think you wake up in the middle of the night in cold sweats or anything like maybe you did a few years back, but what are you kind of like going, we need to keep our eye on that?
I'm really tired of the childish behavior in Washington. And I believe that if the Democrats and the Republicans can't make decisions together, like they used to be able to do, that there's all this egg throwing at each other. We don't get any better. So I'm concerned of that, that it's childish behavior. You're going to have this guy that's going to go run for office. You're going to have this guy or woman that's going to go run for office, and they're going to yell at each other and throw things at each other rather than say, hey, listen, if I do this and you do this and we can work together, that's the thing that scares me. I don't know that we can politically ever get back on track. That's the biggest thing that concerns me. And until we really do, I think that we'll grow, but it's just not going to be like we have in the past.
Yeah, probably grow in spite of that. And truthfully, they act like a bunch. And I don't care which side people are on. It doesn't matter. Some people act like one side's better than the other. No, I see a bunch of third graders that can't really make decisions, do things. And so we, entrepreneurs, business people, are doing what we're doing in spite of it, which means we take control as best we can. So what excites you?
Yeah, what excites me is that I am free. I'm out. I have the ability to go and build a future. It excites me, the opportunity out there, because as many people, you know, I mentioned earlier about the rhetoric, right? People are saying, oh, don't do anything. It's a bad time. Because people have pulled back, that opens doors for more opportunity. So I'm seeking and looking for more opportunity. And there's great deals out there that we've got a couple under contract right now that we're marching towards closing on because the opportunity is so good.
Yeah, that's good. One thing I know you've got is you've got a lot of resources for people. We had great conversation. We didn't do a deep dive into all the nuts and bolts of multifamily. I think that's good. I love the conversation we have because I think people got to learn about who Mike is, and probably a lot of people going, I want to do some work with that guy. If someone just wants to connect, get more info on multifamily, I know you got podcast or training or possibly even invest, share now with us where all they can find you, what all you've got available, and sure, we'll include things in the notes, but just go ahead and let people know what all you've got available.
So we already know, we've established the fact that I love to network. And so I try to put a little bit out there for everybody. Wherever you hang out on social media, whether it's YouTube, go and subscribe to my YouTube channel. Whether it's Facebook, because you're our age, go to my community at Multifamily Unplugged. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, TikTok. I'm always trying to put something out that will be beneficial, educational, inspiring, something that's going to help somebody. My goal is that, Tim, if you're having a bad day and you're just a little down and I can put something out to make you laugh or to make you inspired, I did my job today. Anywhere on social media, you could go to my website at mikemorawski.com and check out coaching, check out my books, whatever you need. Send me an email, call me, whatever. If you want to network, you got questions, I'm here.
Yeah, and podcast, right? Insider Secrets, is that right?
Yeah, I actually have two podcasts. I have Insider Secrets and Multifamily Unplugged, which is a video cast. But Insider Secrets is a podcast on Apple and Spotify.
Yeah, good. So some people are probably catching this on YouTube. Some are doing it on podcasts. They could jump to those there. And that's for people that really want to do a deeper dive into multifamily, correct?
Absolutely.
Very good. Mike, thanks for that. And we'll include links for everything. I recommend people go check all that out. We are Seek, Go, Create. Those are the three names that are in our title. I'm going to let you pick one of those words over the other two that just means more, resonates more with you now at this time. Which word do you choose and why?
Seek. I think that we're all seeking something. And the more you seek, the more doors that open up. And then ultimately, take some action.
Excellent.
Or go create.
Excellent. Mike, thanks for this conversation, man. I have truly loved this conversation for so many reasons and enjoyed that we're able to get to a deeper level and just connect. I love the networking opportunity over the last hour. If you're listening in, go check out podcasts, go check out his resources. I highly recommend you're probably listening to a podcast now. Just jump over and listen in. I think you'll get a little bit more of Mike Murawski and all that he's doing and probably learn some things about multifamily if you don't already know some things about that. I think that'll be beneficial. And one other thing too, we went through a lot of deep conversation here. And I always like to ask someone, if you've listened to this point, you know someone that needs to hear some of the messages that Mike mentioned in his story, that may have spent some time in prison, may have gone through some of the ups and downs that he did, share this episode with them. That's one of the best ways that people get exposed to messages and podcasts like this. So please share that. I appreciate you listening in. I appreciate Mike taking the time. We have new episodes every Monday. Until next time, continue being all that you were created to be.